but that's the old me. Shouting out of my window, throat down, 'cause I don't care anymore. Said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday if you are listening to us live on the air here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or if you're listening on our podcast version, whatever day you're listening to this, I hope you're having a great day. We are getting ready to delve into all things going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining us to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Let me bring the tone down for just a moment and do some housekeeping. First of all, our thoughts are with everybody in Central Florida. It's been a rough couple of weeks as far as storms go, and people are still kind of recuperating after Helene, so just thoughts are with everybody down there. And wanted to give a quick rest in peace and in memoriam to the great Kris Kristofferson. Julio, did you see that he just passed away?
I did. It's been about a week or so now, but yeah. Amazing songwriter and talent, and of course, well known as an actor too. But I think he would primarily like to be recognized for his songwriting. That was kind of what he always wanted to do and be known as, and the fact that he ended up having a career as a singer and an actor was always kind of secondary to him. He wrote a lot of songs that you may not realize he wrote, like standards like Me and Bobby McGee and Sunday Morning Coming Down. And just a brilliant, brilliant songwriter. And then, managed to make a career for himself and music, becoming one of the great voices in outlaw country in particular, and working as one of the highwaymen along with Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings, and now the last one that's left alive, Willie Nelson. And then branched off into making movies, appeared in a lot of great films. I think probably a lot of people remember the Barbra Streisand version of A Star Is Born, because I think we've had three or four versions of that movie now. But he was the male lead in that one, and then
quintessential Kris Kristofferson role.
I'm guessing what you're getting at here, Jeremy, is his role as Whistler in the Blade films.
Got to give it up to Whistler. I mean, this guy was so incredibly prolific, and to me, just in my relationship with movies and the generation I grew up in. And the fact that Wesley Snipes has kind of been back on the zeitgeist post Deadpool and Wolverine, I absolutely thought he was great as Whistler, who was kind of Blade's mentor in the Blade franchise.
Yeah, an outstanding creative person all around. So somebody that's definitely going to be missed. It's been a rough year in general. We've lost a lot. I don't think we ever really got to talk about Dame Maggie Smith passing a few weeks ago either. It's been the roughest year I can remember since maybe 2016, which is a really rough year. That's where we are.
We got to transition into some fun stuff. You had been talking to me a little bit before we started recording about some stuff going on over at Warner Brothers, which we're going to be talking a lot about today.
Yeah, we're gonna delve into all things Batman, but weirdly, it's mostly not going to involve Batman. There's a lot of There's a lot of projects out right now that are from the Batman universe or universes or multiverse or however you want to put it, but don't necessarily, I don't think Batman appears in any of them. We've got one that's a spinoff of the Matt Reeves film, The Batman, that came out a few years ago that we're eagerly awaiting the sequel to. We've got one that is a sequel to another movie in which Batman did not appear, although I guess technically Bruce Wayne did appear in the first one.
Kind of, yeah.
And then we've got a spinoff, an animated series spinoff from another animated series that Batman has appeared in, but isn't in every episode and isn't the lead character in. So that gives you the tease of what's going on there. Now, there are some other Batman projects coming up that actually will feature Batman. I don't think we've even talked about the Batman the Caped Crusader series that's on Amazon Prime right now, which is very good.
I need to check that out.
So that's out there as well. I don't think we've really spent any time talking about that. I've seen all but one episode of that.
You like it?
Very good. As I mentioned, we're waiting for the next Matt Reeves Batman film that's going to star, of course, Robert Pattinson returning to the role. And we've also got this project that's going to go on in James Gunn's new interconnected DC universe, because the Matt Reeves films are outside of that. The Matt Reeves projects are outside of that world. And actually, all of the projects we're talking about today are outside of that world, because we haven't seen anything in that world yet. We'll get the first series, Creature Commandos, in December, and then the first movie, Superman, in June, I believe. June or July, somewhere in there. So we haven't seen any of what James Gunn has up his sleeve yet, but one of the things we know that he has up his sleeve, because it was announced, is a different Batman movie that will be separate from the Matt Reeves movies that takes place in this interconnected DCU that he is building. That's going to be called Batman Brave and the Bold. That's going to be a Batman and Robin movie. And it is going to be the Robin in that film will be Damian Wayne, who is the actual son of Bruce Wayne, his character we haven't seen in live action yet. So there's an interesting dynamic there. It requires, you know, a Batman that's maybe been around for a little while and is a little more seasoned, and maybe a little older than our buddy Arpats.
Real young with Damian.
And I also think that above and beyond that, Matt Reeves' thing, and we're going to talk in much more detail about this later, Matt Reeves' thing is doing this very grounded thing where there's not a whole lot of, you know, there's nothing that you could call like superpowers or anything like that in Matt Reeves' world. It's very ground level and very grounded in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily think that's the right thing for what James Gunn is going to do, because James Gunn is doing a superhero universe. And I want that, you know, give me that. I'm here for it all day long. I think we've had enough different Batman over the years that audiences can separate it. But you know who doesn't think that?
How many Jokers do we have?
You know who doesn't think that, though, Jeremy?
Who's that?
Is the guy that's running Warner Brothers. This idiot.
David Zaslav.
This idiot by the name of David Zaslav. This idiot that gave, and we'll talk about this more a little later as well, that gave Todd Phillips nearly $200 million to make a sequel to a $70 million movie that doesn't look like it should have costed any more and is a complete bomb that apparently nobody wanted. I think people wanted a sequel to that movie, but they didn't want this sequel to that movie. It's very clear, because
if you spend more than twice as more, you just have to make twice as much more.
Right. So instead, they've made less than half of what they made from the first one. This genius, David Zaslav, happy to green light that all day. But we've got this movie that's in the can called Coyote versus Acme that everybody wants to see, that has been shown to test audiences and tested really, really well, that some critics have seen and said it's fantastic, that's hilarious, that is co-written by James Gunn, the guy that's the future of the DC universe, although this is not a DC movie. This is, you know, Coyote being Wile E. Coyote in this case. It's Wile E. Coyote suing Acme for all the defective merchandise they've sold him over the years and his endless pursuit of the Roadrunner. Supposedly a hilarious movie. Lots of people want to see it. And dude wants to write that movie off for a tax break. Now, I will grant you that he needs a tax break after all the money that Joker Faladue is losing. But this guy shouldn't be running a Burger King, much less Warner Brothers. I mean,
you get to make a lot of bad decisions and just get forgiven for it.
No, I wouldn't trust this guy to clean my house. We got to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
stumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind.
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And we're going to talk a little bit about the story about three overworked administrative assistants who have just been put down by their misogynistic boss. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to talk about the movie 9 to 5. But we are going to talk about another production that song has been used in recently. And that is The Penguin, the spinoff series from Matt Reeves' The Batman. That song comes into play at the end of the first episode of this, I'll just go ahead and say it, this excellent new series on HBO and on Max that is very much earning. This is the current, if you followed HBO over the years, you know if they put a show on Sunday night in prime time, that they're putting their brand on that. They're saying, yep, this is out Sunday night primetime. This is must watch. This is going to be, you know, a series that is going to mean a lot to you. So, you know, to put this in perspective for you, some of the other series that have been like the HBO Sunday night flagship shows over the years, currently when this one is not on, you'll have House of the Dragon, you'll have The Last of Us. But historically, it's going to be Game of Thrones. It's going to be The Sopranos. Uh-huh. It's going to be, you know, so when they put something in that position, they don't do that lightly. They are saying this is a show that we think deserves people's attention, that we think is something special. And I got to say, in this case, I think they've hit the nail on the head. I was a big fan of the Matt Reeves Batman movie. I think this series is better. I think this series is really something special and really intense in a way that reminds me of some of those HBO series I mentioned. There are things in this series that very much remind me of the same kind of machinations that we saw in Game of Thrones. That when Game of Thrones was at its best and when they were spinning all the plates, you know, The version of the Penguin that we have in this show, played by Colin Farrell, I think the character that he most reminds me of more than any other character I've seen in fiction is Littlefinger from Game of Thrones.
Interesting. I can see that. Tony Soprano as well, I think.
Yeah, there's like, obviously, you know, there's definitely an antecedent there with the Sopranos in that this is a mafia-based show. This has to do with warring crime families and this one guy that set himself in the middle and is playing these two families against each other in order to gain more personal power and prestige.
Yeah, Littlefinger comparison is apt.
Yeah, that's what Littlefinger was exactly. And this guy has the same kind of machinations going, except he's way more seat of his pants than Littlefinger ever was. Like
he's such a weasel.
Yeah, like I think he is one step ahead of everybody, but he's like only one step ahead of everybody.
yeah.
Like he's not, Littlefinger sometimes seemed like he was 5 steps ahead of everybody. Oz is a step and sometimes maybe only like a quarter step ahead of everybody. Mm. But he can think on his feet, which is ironic because he has problems with his feet. But he could think on his feet and yeah, he's got a brilliant mind. And that's what I love about this series being a Batman-related series. while this is very much a new take and a different take, that's the spirit of that character. If you know the Penguin from the comics, if you know the Penguin from, you know, years and years of stories, yeah, there have been different versions of him over the years. And, you know, for the time, the Burgess Meredith version in the 60s, that was kind of who the character was at that point. But the character as he is now and has been for, probably 30 some odd years now, has really moved away from the gimmicks and gadgets and all of that and become like this crime lord who just stays just on the side of being legit and just, you know, manages to barely keep his nose clean. And everybody knows he's dirty, but he still comes across. Yeah, he still manages to maintain this veneer. And he's a very, very smart guy, very strategic guy. And he runs things, but in a way that lets him kind of get away with it. And
yeah, right.
And that's the guy that we're seeing in this show. And it may be in a more grounded world and also in a very much an early stage of this character, so where he's not really running everything yet, but we're seeing how he's getting to that point. And I think that, you know, Colin Farrell, once again, completely unrecognizable under the makeup of this character. And with the voice that he does and the mannerisms, I mean, if you didn't know this was Colin Farrell, you wouldn't know this was Colin Farrell. This is a performance that should earn him an Emmy nomination.
Yeah, him and Christina Milioti.
Kristen Milioti, who I absolutely adore. She, of course, probably best known prior to this as far as TV goes for being the mother, the titular mother on How I Met Your Mother. This is a 180 from that character. Absolute 180 from that character. But she's been a lot of other great stuff. She was in the movie, was it called Palm Springs with Andy, mm-hmm. with Andy Samberg, which was also really great. She was Leo DiCaprio's first wife in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, a very versatile actress and able to do a lot of stuff. But if you only know her from that stuff, I think you're going to be really surprised what she does with this role as the, she's in a weird position because she's the daughter of this mob family, but the mob is a very misogynistic world. She's not taken seriously. She's treated like she's insane, and she may or may not be insane, but she is dangerous and she is smart.
And I would say whatever insanity she has is a byproduct of the environment that she was put in. I have a really deep appreciation for the Batman. On deeper thematic levels, I think Matt Reeves is just so smart with the way that he deals with these well-worn properties, including the Planet of the Apes series, which he did the second two in that trilogy. Also really good. But he gets to the core of the characters, and I think that's something that both you and I appreciate, is while this is a reimagining, he really gets the characters and the world that he created. I think this world exists as well as it does because of the groundwork that was laid in the Batman and the way that things tied directly from one to the other, and in particular the flood of Gotham that Riddler creates at the end of the movie. That's kind of like the kickoff point of this. But I am in a place now where I really appreciate the fact that it is very grounded, and that's why I totally hate the idea of this Batman being introduced into a world where there are fantastical elements, because I think he understands it as a noir crime drama better than he would understand it as anything else, because I think that's the lens that he views these characters through.
Well, everything
you said, this is just, it's so very good.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely what this series is. It is a noir crime drama with, you know, like I said, some of that, there's a lot of Sopranos in there. There is, and that's fine. But it does that without being a Sopranos clone.
It
brings in the comic book without it being overly comic booky.
And I think what you said about Oz is really interesting, because he does move through he doesn't want his disability to be seen as a weakness. And in fact, he'll go so far as to like reject handicap seating and things like that. But he uses it to disarm people. And he also is okay with them thinking that they're stepping on him, because ultimately he's got more of a bigger picture kind of game plan. But like you said, things have to adjust and things have to adapt throughout, where like he's flying by the seat of his pants. But I think what the show's doing really well is it's setting us up to see Oz as ultimately a good-hearted man, but we should be very wary of that, because I suspect he's going to let us down before this is all said and done.
I think that, you know, the beyond what I already said about Littlefinger, the other character that I think that this version of Oswald Cobblepot is the character's name in the comics. They've shortened it to Oz Cobb or Oswald Cobb here. I think they're, again, trying to make it a little bit more grounded. But the other character I want to say that he very much reminds me of is Vic Mackey from The Shield.
I thought you were going to say Laris from House of the Dragon, but I appreciate your comparison.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen The Shield, first of all, go back and watch The Shield, because it's an amazing series, and it really is one of the foundational, it's certainly the foundation of everything that followed on FX and how FX has become what it is today. But it is one of those foundational shows like The Sopranos that led us into the era of peak TV and what we, you know, what we think of as prestige dramas now. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael Chiklis on that show played this guy who could come across as very charming, but was a manipulative snake and something of a psychopath, or at least a sociopath.
Sure.
And you know, would not be afraid to lie to your face and play two sides against the other. And there's a lot of that, but he could be very charming. And very, you know, and you find yourself rooting for this guy who you know is not a good guy and that you shouldn't be rooting for. And that's what this show has been doing for us so far. And it's really, really interesting. And I just think this works, and it gets the characters and it gets the spirit of the characters, and it doesn't insult the history of these characters despite going off in its own directions. You know, I always say that my mark is, if you can get the spirit of the characters right, I'm willing to go wherever you want to go. Mm-hmm. And this show really does that. Some other things maybe don't. We'll talk about those in a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
See what I'm talking about, baby.
Some people call me the space cowboy, and some people call me the gangster of love. Yeah, and some people walking around calling me Maurice, 'cause I speak of the pompous of love.
Oh, yeah. I have no fear, my dear.
People talk about me, baby.
Talk about me bad too.
You say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong,
doing you wrong.
Well, don't let that worry you, baby.
Oh, baby, bubble.
'Cause I'm right here, right here, right here, right here at home.
Baby,
and I want you to know, baby, 'cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, you know, I know we've got this new Joker movie out, and I know it's a musical, and I know that I could have played something from that movie, but it felt really appropriate to play a cover of a well-known song called The Joker. that maybe tries to go off in a different direction than the original a little bit. And that version there is by Fatboy Slim with Bootsy Collins doing the vocals. Because this movie feels like a cover in a sense, and a cover that tries to go off in its own way. Unfortunately, I don't think it's anywhere near as successful as that version of the Steve Miller Band song is. Assuming that you find that version to be successful. I don't know. What'd you think? Had you heard that before, Jeremy?
No, I had not. Not a big fan. A big fan. I mean, I didn't realize Fatboy Slim did a cover of it with, who'd you say it? Who's the singer?
Bootsy Collins. The legendary Bootsy Collins.
Yeah. I did. Wow. Yeah, that was new to me.
Yeah. This movie's bad, Jeremy. And they should feel bad. I kind of said this at the start of the show, but you know, they spent $190 million on this movie, and I don't know who it's for. Other than, I guess, for Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix. I guess it's for them. You know, the first time Joaquin Phoenix has ever done a sequel, by the way. He always said he never wanted anything to do with any sequels, but I guess, you know, you wave, I'm guessing he probably got $40, $50 million of that $190 million. And, you know, I guess you wave that much money in front of somebody, they're going to do anything you ask them to do, which I get.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say I wouldn't have done the same thing. But this movie, all right, let's get the first thing out of the way first. I wasn't a fan of the first one. I know that it was acclaimed. I know that it had a bunch of Oscar nominations. I know Joaquin won an Oscar for it, and his acting in the movie was great. You know, I'm not necessarily down on him having won the Oscar for it. I think I came out of that movie not knowing how I felt about it, and just as time has gone on, and I don't think I'm the only one in this boat, my estimation of it has diminished. I don't think it is as critically well-respected now as it was when it first came out. I don't think it had as much to say as it thought it did. And I think that it basically was a excuse to do a Scorsese retread in comic book drag that was not really as loyal to either Scorsese or comics as it should have been. Like the movie missed the point of the Joker. And I think there were a lot of people that liked that about it, in that they felt like the Arthur Fleck character was something to identify with. So you're going into this second movie now. And I think I kind of feel like Todd Phillips kind of felt the same way about his audience, that they missed the point of what he was trying to say. So he went out and made a movie to rub it in their faces that they were all wrong.
Yeah. So like, that's the vibe that I've got, is it's almost like a spite film. Like, nobody wanted to do a sequel. They were kind of forced into it for financial reasons. And then what he did was essentially a reaction to the first movie, which can be cool. But when you're like, fighting the core audience of the movie, it's a wild choice that I actually kind of respect.
Yeah. So, but now you've got this movie that doesn't respect the fans of the original medium, and that the first one didn't either. So it's continuing that story. It does not, this character, which frankly, spoiler alert, at the end of the movie, you really do learn really isn't the Joker. So we've got had two movies about the Joker who was not actually the Joker. This time they decide to bring in the vastly popular character Harley Quinn, and the character that's in this movie is not Harley Quinn. It's just not. It gets this character totally wrong. They make her the villain of the story.
Oh, interesting.
And completely miss the point of this character. And this is a character that over time has come to mean a lot to a lot of people. And, you know, full credit to Brianna McLarty from Screen Crush. I listened to her take on this, and I really, really agree with it. This is a character that has become a character that means a lot to a lot of women. because she is a character that her storyline, and we've seen this in the movies too, in the Margot Robbie version of the character, that gets subsumed in this relationship with this guy who is nothing but bad, and eventually breaks away from him and moves away from the bad towards the good, and becomes not only a more heroic character in the traditional heroic sense, but becomes a character that's about female empowerment, and, you know, grows away from being a groupie, basically, is what she was at the start. And this movie not only makes her a groupie, but makes her a manipulative groupie. And it is really, you know, I really have problems with that. Putting aside all of that, I love movie musicals. I'm a huge fan of the genre. Give me a good musical, I'm there for it. This movie also seems to want to be an anti-musical musical. Like in a good musical, when the songs come in, they are going to either drive forward the story, or they're going to drive forward the characters. They're going to reveal things about the characters. They're going to, you know, tell you about their motivations. In this movie, every time a song comes on, it grinds to a freaking halt. And that is not what a musical should do. I get what he was trying to do. I just don't think that Phillips is as smart as he thinks he is. And I don't think he has as much to say as he thinks he does.
Coming from the perspective of someone that hasn't seen it, I feel, in regard to the first movie in particular, that there was a whole lot of rhetoric around the intent and the kind of people who did or didn't like the movie. And as a Scorsese fan and as a Joaquin Phoenix fan, I can acknowledge it's a performance. Mm-hmm. The movie can be boiled down to a central performance that I thought was really strong. And all of the reviews that have come out about The Joker, Folie à Deux, have really just kind of made me not enthusiastic to watch it. I mean, it's not that I won't watch it, but it takes a significant part of my day where I live at to go to the movie theaters and get back and all of that stuff. So, like, it's not worth 4 hours to me to go and see a movie that's just not being liked by anyone. And it's interesting what you said, where, like, if it is kind of a reaction or a pushback against this core audience of incels who may or may not exist, that's an interesting strategy to take. And I don't know. I never, and I'm not saying they don't exist. There's a whole lot of basement dwellers that aren't out in public talking to me, but I haven't met one incel that's like, you know what, I'm the Joker. So I don't know about all of that. I feel like there's a lot of times in particular with entertainment and culture, and there was a Variety article that even came out recently that kind of touches on this, but that there's a lot of ideological posturing and things that are put upon movies that may or may not even really exist in hopes of either drumming up controversy or taking an intellectual high ground that may or may not exist. And I don't know why you would want to alienate people who were fans of the first movie, if that makes sense.
I mean, I think some of the incel stuff was overblown to begin with. I think, you know, these fears that were trumped up with the first one of that, oh, this is going to inspire violence, obviously that didn't materialize.
Right.
You know, so I mean, I think a lot of that was overblown. And frankly, I think some of it was marketing.
Yeah.
I think some of it was generated by the studio to try to raise interest in the movie and make it seem more important than it was. And it worked. You know, the movie made $1 billion.
Yeah.
My bottom line is, and I, you know, I talked to, when we were talking about the Penguin, I talked about how much I loved how much it gets the spirit of the character right.
Sure.
This is the opposite. This movie gets the spirit of these characters absolutely wrong. There is no, this might be a fine movie if it didn't purport to be the Joker and Harley Quinn. But it's
boring.
The characters that we are seeing on the screen are not the Joker and Harley Quinn. And there's no reason for it to be a DC movie. And Todd Phillips would be better off creating his own stuff. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
The benefit. Pablo Bank is there, what a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate. The Hendersons will dance and sing as Mr. Kite flies through the ring. Don't be late. Mrs. K and H assure the public their production will be second to none. And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. So, Jeremy, we've had the good in the Batman world and in the Penguin. We've had the bad in the Batman world with Joker Folie à Deux. Now it's time for the hell yeah in the Batman world.
All right.
So that is going to be, of course, the animated series on Max, Kite Man, Hell Yeah, which is a spinoff of the Harley Quinn animated series that we've had four seasons of, I think, at this point. And we are getting a fifth season of that coming up very soon. Looking forward to that as well. So this is, we're getting a little bit further removed from Batman here. Kite Man is a villain that has fought Batman over the years, but he's also like kind of a general DC universe villain. And a, you know, C or D list villain at best, to be sure. But they brought him in the Harley Quinn series. He ended up being a lot of fun, and people really enjoyed the character. And now they've spun him off into his own series. After kind of running him through some serious hell in the Harley Quinn series, where he was engaged to Poison Ivy, and she ends up dumping him for Harley, and kind of got his heart stomped out. Now we find him in a new relationship with a character called Golden Glider, who is voiced by Academy Award nominee Stephanie Hsu from Everything Everywhere All at Once. And the two of them take over a bar that's frequented by kind of like C-list villains and get wrapped up in some pretty crazy stuff that really like kind of looks at the whole DC universe. And this show is so much fun. Like, I know you haven't seen it all, but you've seen the first few episodes, right?
Yeah, I have. And it really just carries the torch over from the Harley Quinn series that both of us liked and discussed in great detail. So if y'all are interested in our thoughts on the animated Harley Quinn series, you can go back and check those out. There's a significant number of them. This is something that both you and I were really big fans of. And I think Kite Man, it fits right there in that same kind of category and feels very much like a worthy predecessor. So what I've seen, I really liked, and I do intend on getting in and continuing to watch the rest of it. Is the whole season over?
The whole season is out now. It's very much in the same vein that the Harley series is, in that it is very... can be very violent and very over the top in a lot of ways, but in a very funny way, and still has a lot of heart. Like I think the Harley Quinn animated series has a lot more heart than you might expect it to. And
yeah.
I think this one does as well. I think the core is the relationship between Kite Man, AKA Chuck, and Golden Glider, his girlfriend. But they build this kind of little like pseudo family around them with people that hang out in the bar. So it's got like kind of like that, like Cheers element to it in a sense, but like with all this over the top superheroic stuff, we do get some appearances from some of the characters we know and love from Harley Quinn. Although not the lead character. Harley doesn't show up. We don't ever see Batman. We very rarely see any superheroes at all in this. We do see a few here and there, but it really does focus on the villains in particular, and the antagonists for this show are kind of other villains. So it's kind of like how the big bad guys look down and put down these like C or D list villains. So like the major antagonist is probably Lex Luthor. And it's worth mentioning too that Lex Luthor in this series, as in Harley Quinn, was played by the late great Lance Reddick. And this ends up being, at least from a voice standpoint, I don't know if he's got anything else live action that's still in the can waiting to come out, but this was his last voice acting role. He in fact, didn't make it all the way through the series, so he does end up getting replaced towards the end of the series, and there's the last episode that his voice is featured in is dedicated to him. But, you know, he's been a great Lex Luthor throughout all of this, so... and he has a much more prominent role in this than he did in Harley, than he ever has in Harley Quinn. But we get to see a lot of great DC villains in this. And we also get the creation of, as far as I know, a new character, a new villainous character named Helen Villigan, the head of Villigan's, which is okay. A villain themed restaurant / bar chain / analog for Amazon. So they run these themed restaurants, but they're also the preeminent delivery service / online merchant. And, you know, she's basically taking over the world through an Amazon like company. And very interesting character voiced by Judith Light. And I don't know for 100% sure that this is not a character from the comics, but I don't believe it is. I believe it's a character they invented for the series. And I hope this is one of those characters that makes the backward jump to the comics the way Harley Quinn herself did, because Harley Quinn was a creation of Batman, the animated series. She's a lot of fun. She's kind of a cross between, between Jeff Bezos and Mom from Futurama.
Okay.
Yeah. A little younger, maybe got a little bit of Martha Stewart in her too. It's an interesting character and is a character that ends up having some motivations to do the right thing for the wrong reason. Because if some of these big heavyweight villains destroy the world, she has no more customers.
Oh yeah. That's a good point.
So, She wants to continue to enrich herself, but in order to do that, she has to make sure the world still exists. So,
Judith Light, I knew it sounded familiar. She's the mom from Who's the Boss, is that right?
Among many, many other things, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Great character actress. She's been in a lot of stuff, done a lot of theater work as well, and... I really love this series. I think the main character that we see carry over from Harley Quinn, other than, of course, Kite Man himself, is Bane, who is in every episode.
What a great addition.
Yeah, and that weird version of Bane that Harley Quinn has given us is just a gift that keeps on giving. He is
like... Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Does it match the theme or the essence of the character?
I mean, it's very much a satire of the Tom Hardy version from the Chris Nolan films.
Sure.
It's over the top goofy. But the elements are still there. Like he's still this guy that, grew up in a pit and, became, had to fight his way out of it and all that. But I mean, would the comic book Bane and the animated series Bane get along? No. the comic book Bane would rip the animated series Bane in half without 5 minutes thought about it. But it does still, it does still hold true to that spirit. But really, the thing that works differently here is that this series is very much tongue in cheek.
Same
way the Harley Quinn series is, and. It leaves it open to that kind of thing, but it doesn't like trample over what makes this character. And especially in the case of Bane, because this version of Bane is very much satirizing the Tom Hardy version of the character. It's there in the accent and the voice, if nothing else. And the fact that everything he says is muffled as though he's wearing something over his face. The character works, the show works. We get to see a lot of fairly obscure DC characters in this, and I really like that about that. But we also get to see like the baddest of the bad, save for the Joker. The Joker does not show up in this, but the Legion of Doom is in there a lot, and even arguably the greatest DC villain of all, Darkseid, plays a fairly regular role in this show.
Also really good and funny.
Yeah. So, you know, this show, I can't say enough fun stuff about it. I really love it. I think it's really funny. I hope it gets another season as well as Harley Quinn. I know this is one of those things that, you know, we talked earlier about that James Gunn has this DCU that he's building. But they've built this thing in with that of what they're calling Elseworlds, which is, if you're a DC Comics fan, is a brand that you know and love. It's basically DC's version of What If.
Sure.
It's, you know, stuff that takes place outside the main continuity that allows you to go off in a weird direction. The very first one was a story called Gotham by Gaslight, which is Batman set in the Victorian era. You know, so this, having that Elseworlds brands, which Matt Reeves' Batman is falling under, the Harley Quinn animated series falls under, the Teen Titans Go animated series, which has been running for a long time and is not stopping, continues to run under. It allows them to do those kind of one-off things outside of this, you know, mainline continuity that we're going to have, and still have that mainline continuity where we can have this big superhero universe where everybody comes together like the MCU does.
I think this might be one of the best things that DC has going for it, is right now it exists in multiple different pockets. And if James Gunn is doing a DCEU that is the overarching thing, that's amazing as well. But I do hope that these Elseworlds stories do continue to exist.
Well, I mean, they're not turning their back on Matt Reeves, and they're not turning their back on Teen Titans Go, because both of those things make too much money.
Yeah, that's right.
So Harley Quinn is maybe not quite as successful, but you know, hopefully they continue that as well, because I've really enjoyed it. We've got to run. We'll be back with next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.